Good afternoon, everybody. Good morning, good evening, whatever time it is where you are. The time right now is 10.02 a.m., Saturday, March 5th of 2011. This is Tom Harris. Welcome to the Tom Harris Live program from Chicago, Illinois. You would usually say beautiful Chicago, Illinois, but it's not so beautiful out right now. It's not so bad, though. You know, I actually went out this morning and went out and about in the weather, and it was snowing, everyone. It was snowing. Now, it doesn't really feel like winter anymore. I know I talked about this. You know, it's starting not to feel like winter, but it still does sometimes get a little bit chilly, and sometimes it does snow. And I was out today, and I was feeling very warm in my coat. And it's probably, you know, 39 degrees. I mean, it's pretty warm out, you know, comparatively. I suppose, you know, people who are in Arizona or Florida say 39 degrees, that's freezing. No, but for here and the wintertime, you know, it's not all that cold. And there is no snow on the ground. It rained yesterday. We had a good amount of rain yesterday. But it was snowing this morning. I decided to run out to the nearest good coffee shop. There are two coffee shops near me. And unfortunately, the one that I used to go to, which was this little place about a half block from here, called Café Ennui. And they were there for years and years and years. I mean, probably they were there for at least, you know, 20, 30 years. They closed down last year, back in 2010 sometime, I think during the summer. And now there's another place called Common Cup, which is not far from me. But I don't really care for their coffee, to be honest. It's not the best coffee. It's all right. I go there in a pinch. But there is a place that's just a little further. It's actually about a half mile from here, called Charmers. And they used to be, you know, years ago, about, you know, 10 years ago, there was a bar there called Charmers. And it was my local bar that I would go to if I wanted to go to a bar. I'm not into bars, though. I really don't go to bars very often. So it isn't a, you know, wasn't sort of place that I went all the time. But I was a regular for a while, but you know, got sick of that pretty quickly. Because, you know, it's not the same here as it is over in the UK. We don't have a pub culture here in the same way that you do in the UK. So, you know, when I would go there, I'd go there when I wanted a drink, basically. And didn't have anything in the house. I'd rather drink at home, to be honest. It's much, much cheaper. Anyway, getting way off the subject here. So I went over to Charmers Cafe now. Now they're a coffee shop and they serve food. It's a different owner. The owner of the old bar passed away back in, I think, about 2004. And they had these... The bar was beautiful. You know, it was one of these old spaces from the 1920s. It's a vintage building. And they had these beautiful decorations in the bar, these sort of Art Nouveau decorations. And they have incorporated those into this coffee shop / cafe, which is kind of now taking the place of the bar. But the I'd have to tell you, they looked a lot better in the dark. They do. That's true of a lot of things, and people as well. You probably noticed. I know I look a lot better in the dark than I do in the light. Bob, I don't know, is asking, did I get rain? Yes, we had rain yesterday, and it is now snowing outside right now. Not much. It's just kind of a few flakes here and there, and it's not that cold, actually. I know we talked about this last week. I was talking about climate change on the last show. You know, it actually has to be between certain range of temperatures in order to be able to snow. And it's not going to stick. I guarantee you it's not going to stick. None of this. It's we have puddles of liquid water on the ground, you know, from the rain yesterday. So it's not going to stick. Anyway. Bob, I don't know, is saying, quit talking foreign on the temperatures. 39 to us is sweltering if it's in centigrade. No, we use imperial measurements here in the U.S., folks. And that includes Fahrenheit. None of this metric stuff here. We don't use kilometers. We don't use, we do use liters. I guess we do. Liters to a certain extent for soft drinks. So if you go to a store and you get a bottle of Coke or something, you get a 2-liter bottle. That's the only way we use liters here. I don't even think it for booze. I think it's well, maybe for booze. I'm not really sure. Anyway, it's not that cold out. So I'd say it's, let's see, 32 degrees Fahrenheit would be 0 degrees centigrade. And it's about 39 or 40 out now. I'd say it's maybe not quite 40 cause it is snowing. So let's say it's about 2 or 3 degrees, maybe 5 degrees centigrade out right now. So that's, yeah, it's not warm, but it's warmer than it has been. I mean, it's been much colder so far. Anyway, it's good to hear that I'm actually going out live because, yeah, I'm always afraid that nobody's going to be able to hear me when I start talking. So I do have a couple of things to talk about today. We're going to talk about Finland today. This is a travel show. As I do about every 3 weeks, we do a show talking about the various places where I have been and where I have traveled. And today's topic is Finland. And I have an email here from Finland that I'll read out a little bit later. But first, before I do that, I have another email. Now, this is coming from James in London. And this is a commentary on my previous show. And James had this to say. Global warming has changed its name to climate change. As we have found out, the whole planet has changing weather that is not the same. I guess that's why it's changing. As for evidence, while lots of people are left confused with it, as we don't know what to believe, as the evidence is conflicting. But if you look at it, James, it really isn't. That there's a lot of confusion being made on purpose by people who don't want to accept it. As we don't know what to believe, as the evidence is conflicting. So is there some evidence reports that are not conflicting? Yes. The data sets that are being used by the climatologists in general do not conflict. The people who point to things not being the same or whatever are not looking at this complete set of evidence. And a lot of it, a lot of the people who would like to deny global warming and a lot of people who have political motivation to not believe it and to try to encourage other people not to believe it are cherry picking their data. So just picking what supports their own side of things and not actually looking at the full picture. But, climate change is not controversial among scientists. So this, you have probably 3 million people out there doing climatology work and maybe, 30,000 of them don't believe that climate change is occurring. It's a tiny, tiny minority. And as I said before, there are no absolutes in science. Science is a matter of consensus. And so you have a lot of, you do have some noise among scientists. And there always is for everything. There's still people out there who probably don't believe in gravity. Because gravity is a theory, folks. People don't realize this. Gravity is not a scientific fact. Gravity is a theory. It's a very, very well-supported theory, much like evolution. But it's not a fact because that's not the, because it's not an absolute, and because there are, like I said, there's no absolutes in science. Another comment. Bob Idanoa is saying it's chuffing cold here, maxing out at about 5. I think that we're about the same here, Lil. I think it's about the same here. And she says that I think it gets cold in Finland. They do indeed. And we're going to be talking about that a little bit later as I get into the Finland discussion. But I'm still reading this email from James. I'm only one sentence in. Is there some evidence reports that are not conflicting? Yes. And Al Gore, wasn't he going on a climate change campaign after he lost out to Bush? I know he had to change the name from global warming to climate change, then disappeared. So what's happening with him? Well, Al Gore didn't have anything to do with that, the change. I think that, if anything, Al Gore was more responsible for dumbing down the sort of concepts and trying to get them into terms that would be more easily understood by people who don't have scientific training. So I think, the term global warming is an oversimplification. And I think that Al Gore had a lot to do with pushing that term. Whereas I don't think that scientists were necessarily using that term, commonly all along. But Al Gore, what's he doing now? He's still around. Yeah, we hear about them more often here in this country than you do over in the UK. I'm quite sure of that. But he, you know, isn't in the public eye now. He's doing his you know, activism, whatever, off kind of in the background right now. He pops up from time to time. As for Alex Jones, I've heard of him and listened to some of his shows. He is such a scaremonger that has ads on his shows. It seems to make money off people. Some of the stuff. Oh, it seems to make money off of people. Yes. And a lot of the scaremongers do that. They say, oh, the world is coming to an end. Therefore, you need to buy this from our sponsor, you know, the seeds or emergency supplies. I talked a bit about this last time when I was talking about Glenn Beck and sort of how he's controlling people through fear. Alex Jones does exactly the same thing. So, yeah. All right. So he has ads on his show that seems to make money off of people. Some of the stuff he comes out with makes me laugh, and I hope no one takes him seriously. Well, that's the impression I get. Unfortunately, a lot of people take Alex Jones seriously, and a lot of these conspiracy theorists who have a public forum, people like Alex Jones and Glenn Beck, you know, yes, a lot of people take them very seriously, and that's what's scary. It's scarier than actually what they're actually warning us about or they're talking about. A lot of times, you know, the people that people are so gullible, I find scary. I really do. I find that frightening how people are so easily led. James goes on, and as for climate change, I just get the impression, and so do a lot of people in this country, that is just an opportunity for light bulb companies and energy companies to make a couple of extra pounds out of their customers. The energy-saving light bulbs being pushed in this country are very slow to come up bright. Don't get me wrong, Tom, I'm not against the theory of climate change, but it just seems that ordinary people are getting blinded in this country, so they get a poor deal, which I think isn't fair. People just want a fair deal and get on with their life. I just feel that in the last 10 to 15 years, that life has just changed beyond recognition. It's a dog-eat-dog world out there, it seems, and values are being destroyed and not protected or good ones created. From James in London. How do you create values? Just curious about that. The light bulbs, you know, we get that here too. You know, we have these energy-saving light bulbs now. And what they are, they're mini fluorescent bulbs, which means they have mercury in them. And mercury is not a safe substance. But the thing about these is they cost more. They do cost more. But they last, like, you know, 10 times as long. And if you factor in the kind of the replacement cost of these, they're really not that expensive. I don't have any particular problem with these energy-saving bulbs. I'll be quite honest with you. I have some in my house. In fact, I think I'm kind of gradually over the years have changed over so that I think almost every bulb now in my apartment is a energy-saving bulb. I think there's still a few incandescents that are burning that they just haven't gone out yet. But as they've gone out, I've replaced them with these energy-saving ones. And they're supposed to be good for 10 years or 7 years or something. Yeah, they certainly do last a lot longer than the old ones because I was replacing. I have a lamp next to my bed, and it's the main light source in this half of my apartment. I live in a very small apartment, so there's two lamps in my apartment, and there's no overhead illumination at all. But so the light that I'm reading by, you know, normally is this light that's something. It's about 8 feet to my right and slightly behind me. As I sit at my desk where I record the show. So, you know, but I don't have any problem with the brightness. I'm not quite sure how the bulbs that you have over in the UK might be different. James is saying hello. Hello, James. James Sanders, 12 years old, will be following me at 5 p.m. UK time. So everybody tune in to James. He's our newest presenter here on United Kingdom Radio. So James says he's thought of a subject for his show. Are you going to tell me what it is, James? What is it? And James would like very much for people to call into his show and chat with him. It's hard to fill an hour. And I think that, you know, hey, you know, we all need to help each other. Now, for these travel shows, you know, doing these travel shows, I'm not always quite as open to getting calls. You know, I do like calls, but I would ask that if you're going to call, have it be about Finland. Or anything really, but you know, try to keep on topic. James is saying, "Hi, Tom. I gather you thought of a subject." I've always had a subject, dear. I've always had a subject. I'm talking about Finland today. I was wondering if you had a topic. You know, earlier while Chris was on, I asked James if he had a topic that people would be able to call him about, so I could kind of plug his show. That's what I'm talking about, James. You know, if you have a topic, you know, let me know, and I'll tell people to call in. Bob, I don't know, is saying, climate change has been going on since the Earth was born, and we probably hasten it by what we as humans do. But a new ice age or whatever can strike at any time. Had there not been the last ice age, then England wouldn't be shaped as it is. I think the whole point of the people pushing the climate change aspect is to make folks realize that everything doesn't last forever. She goes on to say, be careful of the mercury bulbs. If they blow, you need to leave the room, and you have to dump them elsewhere than the trash. Yeah, here in the States, that you actually are supposed to take them to a recycling center. There's like these special dropping areas where you can drop the energy-safe light bulbs, because they are hazardous. They have mercury in them, and mercury is not a safe substance. Well, Bob, I don't know, is making a really good point here, and I don't want to go on and on about climate change again this week, because I talked about this last week. As she points out, climate change has been going on continuously. Now, the thing about climate, though, and this is how, like I said last week, this is how it's different from weather. Climate doesn't have the amount of change by far. You know, weather varies greatly, and its weather is constantly different, but climate is more or less stable. So, for example, you have the southwest of the United States. Most of that area is a desert climate. And no matter what the weather does from year to year, it goes up and down, and you know, sometimes there's more moisture, sometimes there's less moisture. It is still a desert climate. And it's within the parameters of a desert climate. But if the climate gets warmer, or let's say an infusion of moisture, if the climate becomes moister in the southwest, you're going to find that the desert is going to start to shrink. And it will no longer be a desert climate. It'll be changing. It'll be you know, moving to be a grassland or something else. You know, the Sahara Desert hasn't always been the Sahara Desert. Sahara Desert used to be, grassland. It used to be prairie. And before that, it was ocean. Well, that's more plate tectonics, and you know, that's less climate and more, the plate tectonics making the land different. You know, how do I explain this? Look up plate tectonics in Google. The upthrust of the tectonic plates, which is causing the elevation. Yeah, so it's not an ocean anymore. But yeah, sure. See, here's the interesting thing now, and this is why scientists are alarmed, that we are now in an interglacial period. Now, the ice ages occur. It's not at any moment. They don't occur at any moment. It's not that fluid. But they do kind of have about a 10,000, or I think it's 100,000 year cycle. So we have had over the years you have an ice age, and then we have a warming period, and then we have another ice age about 100,000 years later. This is what we can see from things like ice cores, tree ring data. Of course, tree ring data is limited. You can only go back about 12,000 years or something using tree ring data. But we can see that there are fluctuations. There are normal fluctuations in climate. And it's true. But it happens very, very slowly over great, great periods of time. And what has alarmed scientists is that, you know, we can see from tree ring data how these, and ice core data, how these fluctuations occur and how long it takes for them to happen. And what we've noticed in the past 100 years is that the warming is happening much, much more quickly. So that is where this idea, yeah, this is why scientists are concerned, because the one thing that has changed in the last 100 years especially is a huge increase of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere and other greenhouse gases, things like aerosols, hydrofluorocarbons, and these all have an impact. So the warming is happening much, much faster than it normally would. So when you have a notice, when you notice a change in the pattern, this 100,000 year pattern, and all of a sudden we're facing temperatures that are far higher than we're supposed to at this point in the system, then you know that there's something wrong. Okay. Bob, I don't know, saying if you've got an hour show on Finland, you may as well leave it till next week. Sorry, love. That's okay. No, we're still going to talk about Finland. In fact, we're going to do that as soon as I do. Hang on a second. Chris Reardon has decreed.
Chris Reardon.
I love it.
All right. As you know, I go and scour Chris Reardon's old shows for noteworthy decrees, and I play them out of my show. I haven't done one for a few weeks. And in fact, this is kind of a rerun. I was going through my files, and I found one that seems appropriate for today. So here we go. This is what Chris Reardon has decreed this week.
Any money that you saved, you must send in 25% of it. No, that's greedy. 25% is greedy. You must send in £161. Money in my pocket, boys and girls. Ding!
And stay tuned for future installments of Chris Reardon Has Decreed, where he might say something like this.
I have ordered something, boys and girls. It's very nice. It's like a long rectangular box, and in it are my large instrument, certain politicians, my Dyson Hoover, two dogs that look like Pluto, and Suko.
And that was Chris Reardon Has Decreed for this week. I'm going to get back to doing these, folks. I promise you. The thing is, though, about the, you know, it takes time to do. You know, for something that lasts about, you know, 40 seconds on the show, it's a lot of work. Anyway, okay, so we're going to take a break here. I'm going to take a couple sips of my overly sweet coffee. Yes, I put too much sugar in. And it's good, though. It's still good. I'm going to go ahead and play a couple trails, and then we'll be right back and talk about Finland. So I'll be right back.
United Kingdom Radio have teamed up with a brand new online internet radio music service called You Love It, We Play It, aimed at the over 25s and featuring some presenters that present right here on United Kingdom Radio. So if you've had enough of all that thank you, Chaz and Dave, then try our brand new music service at www.youloveitweplayit.com.
Hello, Chris Reardon here. I hope you enjoy our shows here at United Kingdom Radio. A bit of fundraising now for the station. If you fancy a bit of music in your life, then why not try one of my weekly non-stop music mixes? All music, no talking. You can get a new one each week and download them from www.chrisreardonshow.co.uk. For just 80 pence UK, that's about $1.30 US, they are over 75 minutes long and contain some of the brand new club tunes around at the moment in the UK. Download them now from www.chrisreardonshow.co.uk. My weekly mixes, just 80 pence. www.chrisreardonshow.co.uk. I love it! Gling!
Beep, 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 gling!
What a load of old twaddle that is!
All right, and we are back here on United Kingdom Radio. This is Tom Harris live from Chicago. And stay tuned for, I almost said Sean Riches. That's because he used to follow me here on the show. Stay tuned at 5 o'clock here UK time for James Sanders. And he will be talking about something that he's organizing for the station. So Bob, I don't know, is saying she loves Chris Reardon Has Decreed this week. Thank you very much. We're going to talk about Finland now. And now, Finland is an interesting place. And it's a place that is not, I don't think people normally think of Finland as being a vacation spot. And it's kind of an isolated area of Scandinavia next to the Russian border. And interestingly enough, Finland is, after the UK, the country that I've been to the most outside of the US. Even Canada. I haven't even been to Canada as many times as I've been to Finland. And that's because I've been to Finland 5 times. And the reason for that is because my very best friend in the world, Paul from Finland, lives in Finland. And he hasn't always lived in Finland. His wife is from Finland, and he moved there in 1988. I'll be talking a little bit more about that. And we have an email here from Paul talking about Finland a little bit. And so it is also the country that I've had the most behind-the-scenes view of, if you know what I'm talking about. You know, because normally when I travel, I'm more a traveler. You know, I'm there, I come through, I see what I want to see, I leave, you know. And Finland is a place where I've actually spent some quality time sort of immersed in whatever passes for normal in Paul's circle of friends. And so it's a place where I've seen behind the curtain a bit. And so I probably have a different view of Finland than a lot of people who would just go there as a tourist. Well, anyway, I'm going to start out with some fun facts about Finland. Finland is situated in Northern Europe and shares its borders with Sweden, Norway, and Russia. Finland is a constitutional republic and became a member of the European Union in 1995. The capital of Finland is Helsinki. It has about 1 million, roughly, people who live. That's about one-fifth of the population of Finland lives in Helsinki and around Helsinki. A quarter of the country's total area lies north of the Arctic Circle. The oldest city in Finland is Turku, which was founded in the 14th century, back in the 1300s. Finland is the most sparsely populated country in Europe, with only 16 inhabitants per square mile. 75% of the country is covered in forest. I can vouch for that. There are exactly 187,888 lakes larger than 500 square meters and 179,584 islands within the territory of Finland. Finland is the seventh largest country in Europe in terms of area. Finland has two official languages, Finnish and Swedish. However, the majority of people in the country have Finnish as their native language. The Finnish language is not related to any other language except for two. They kind of form their own family called the Ugro-Finnic languages. Now, Finnish Estonian, which it makes sense because they're very nearby Estonia and they're culturally very similar, and Hungarian. Finland joined the United Nations in 1955 and the Nordic Council in 1956. Finland was one of the last regions of Europe to adopt Christianity. I would argue they still don't quite have a handle on it. According to the World Audit Study of 2006, Finland is the least corrupt and most democratic country in the world. One of the largest mobile phone manufacturers in the world, Nokia Corporation, is a Finnish company. Finland is the only country in the world which broadcasts news in Latin, that's an interesting topic there. Finland claims to be the home of Santa Claus, but you know, it's interesting because the Finnish Santa Claus isn't quite the same. The Finnish Santa Claus is known as Joulupukki, and I've talked about him on the show before, because Joulupukki is actually a carryover from the pagan religion that existed before. He's actually connected with Odin, with the Norse god Odin. There are 1.8 million saunas in Finland, of which approximately 500 are traditional smoke saunas. Yeah, I would say, beyond the shadow of doubt, that the sauna is, or as the Finns say, sauna, and it's, I tend to say it that way, the sauna is the best invention that the Finns ever came up with. I have to say, I love taking a sauna. And I actually did have a sort of traditional sauna out at the summer place, at Paul and his wife's summer place, which is on the Bay of Bothnia. So it's right on the sea. not too far from where they live in Kotka. Now, I'm going to read out, actually, James is saying that his show is going to be fun, so don't miss it. Yeah, okay. I won't miss it. I'll be here. All right, so I have an email here. Now, this comes from my best friend, Paul. And Paul says, hey, sorry, but I'm being called away to do some emergency lumberjack work, and I won't be home while your show is airing, so I'll write some quick stuff on Finland. Scientists have predicted the coldest weather in 1,000 years, but so far we've had milder temperatures than last year, which means that we have more snow than last year. Yeah, and that I was talking about that with the climate change stuff, that you know, just because it's cold doesn't mean there's going to be a lot of snow, and a lot of snow means it's actually warmer. We have at least 3 feet of snow on the ground here on the southern coast, and more further north. The sea is totally frozen solid, as are the lakes and rivers. You were in Finland during the winter, so you may recall when driving that you were not driving on asphalt. You're driving on a thick slab of ice over the road, which with packed down snow on top of that. I can remember it was like riding through a tunnel sometimes. And when you were walking, you were either trudging through snow or walking on slippery ice. Well, it's much the same here during the winter. he goes on to say, there are basically only two seasons in Finland. Winter and summer, and both of them cause SAD, seasonal affective disorder. Summer, because of the midnight sun, you know, meaning that the sun doesn't actually set during the summer, and winter, because of the polar nights, meaning that the sun actually doesn't rise. Remember, a quarter of the Finnish territory lies above the Arctic Circle. This is one of the few countries in the world where people are affected by cabin fever, or wintertime seasonal affective disorder. This usually causes long-term depression, paranoia, and occasionally fits of violence. And he goes on to say, I'm so sad because the frost giants are after me. Other than that, life is fine here in the Great White North, and the Northern Lights are gorgeous. Your pal, Paul Bunyan. Paul Bunyan, huh? P.S. Paul of Finland is a completely fictional character and does not exist. Well, thank you very much for that, Paul. I've actually been sitting on this email for a few weeks because I talked about doing the Finland show a couple of weeks ago and ended up doing Edinburgh instead. So, yeah, so I've actually been sitting on this for a while. I've gotten an email from him since then that said that, yeah, that this has been a very mild winter compared to what it normally is. And so much for the predictions of, you know, 1,000-year cold winter. But anyway, yeah, as he says in his email, I have been in Finland in both the summer and in the winter. And I'll get into more of that here shortly. I've been there more during the summer because that's usually the time when I have to travel. And moving on. So my first time in Finland was in 1988. And the reason why I went there was to be in Paul's wedding. Now, Paul, as I've said before on the show, I don't want to talk too much about Paul because he gets embarrassed and he blushes. but Paul is somebody who I've known for many, many years. We went to high school together. And I think I've known Paul for almost longer than anybody else other than my family. So, you know, it definitely is somebody who I'm very close to and have been close to for a long time. And now he and his wife lived in America when they were first married. And then back in 1992, it's about the same time that I moved away from Florida, because we all knew each other back during that time when I was living in Florida. He moved to Finland with his wife. So 1988 was my first trip to Finland. And it was a very quick trip, I have to say. Now, the thing that I remember most about that trip was that it was only my second trip abroad. And, you know, my first one had been back when I was right out of high school, and it was with a group. And this was sort of my first trip where I was traveling independently, making my own itinerary, kind of handling everything myself. I got a 2-week Eurail pass and started out in London, ended up in London, and kind of did this 2-week journey. And I was only in Finland for about 2.5 days. It wasn't very long. Because I went there specifically for the wedding. Now, getting to Finland is not the easiest thing in the world because, you know, unless you fly directly into Helsinki or Tampere, which is the other large city in Finland, then the main way that most people get there is by boat. You can go by train, but it takes much, much longer. If you're going to go from Stockholm to Helsinki by train, it takes about 24 hours. And that the reason why is because you have to go, you know, way, way north and around the Gulf of Bothnia, or the Gulf of Finland, actually, sorry. You have to go all the way around the Gulf of Finland. So it's a long way north, and you go above the Arctic Circle, and then you have to go all the way down to the southern coast of Finland where Helsinki is. So most people will do it in the shorter route, and the shorter route is to take a ship. And so that is normally how I've gotten back and forth to Finland. I would first find my way to Stockholm. It's not difficult to get to Stockholm by train. And, passing through, Copenhagen, which I talked about on a previous show. And then you go to the port. You actually make your way from the port, or from the train station in Stockholm. You take a subway train to the main ferry port of Stockholm, which I don't remember the name of right now, and you find a ship. Now, you have to usually plan these things in advance. And you go you have to make a reservation. Now, you can go the day of sailing, but whether or not you're going to find a space on the boat is questionable. Now, as I found over the years, I really don't need a space on the boat. I don't need a cabin. And these are big cruise ships. These they have different lines. You have the Viking line, or as they say in Finland, the Viking line. The Silja line, which is Finnish for seal, and they have a cute logo of a seal. I like the ships just because of the seal, just because the seal logo is cute. I don't know if they've changed it or not over the years, but I doubt it. So you go down the ferry, you get your ferry, and it takes 12 hours to make the crossing. And there's two different routes that these ships take, and they kind of all take the same routes. And one is Helsinki Stockholm to Helsinki, and of course back again. And then the other one is from Stockholm to Turku, which I mentioned earlier. So the oldest city in Finland. And so, but that first time, the only spot that I could get, and I didn't have a cabin. I kind of slept on the in the seats. They have these seats kind of looking out the window. It's kind of a common area, so there's people wandering through, and there's other people trying to sleep there too. It was an overnight, it was a daytime cruise, my first trip there. I've taken it on both, because you kind of have the daytime ones, and then you have the nighttime ones. During the day, you don't really need a cabin because you're on deck. You're out looking at the islands. Absolutely gorgeous boat ride this is, but it is long. So you do find yourself wandering around. These are big modern cruise ships. So there are lots of things to do. There are restaurants on board. There's a casino usually. They have some sort of entertainment usually. But mostly, you sit on deck or just kind of wander around the ship and gamble, whatever. And I did a lot of that. I played a lot of the fruit machines. They're more traditional slot machines and video poker and that sort of thing. That's what I did. We landed in Turku about 11 o'clock at night. Now, I was trying to get to Kotka. Now, Kotka, where Paul and Mari live, is actually on the southern coast of Finland. And it's not very far from the Russian border. It's only about a half an hour, 45-minute drive from the Russian border. And there isn't a train, at least there wasn't at that time, there wasn't a train that went directly to Kotka from Helsinki. The train actually goes in kind of a semicircle. And it hits a number of small towns. Now, this was my first trip where I was traveling independently, and I didn't understand exactly the way the trains worked. So once the ship landed in Turku, I decided, okay, great, I'll take the train to Helsinki. There's a train out of Helsinki at 12:30. This is midnight now. Train out of Helsinki at 12:30. It'll get me to Kotka about 5 a.m. And then I'll, I'll be, you know, fine. I'll be get there early in the morning and all of that. And so the first leg of the trip went fine. Was not any problem. We got to Turku, to Helsinki, got there on time. You know, your rail pass covered. Oh, yeah. And if I should mention, if you have your rail pass, that is actually makes your crossing on the Silja line, or the Viking line, free. You don't have to pay for that. That is actually covered by your rail. At least it used to be. I don't know if that's true anymore, but it was certainly true in 1999, which was the last time I was in Finland. But anyway, so I got to Helsinki. I got about midnight, and the train is out at 12:30. What I didn't realize is you get on the train. You know, train for Kotka sets out, and we go for a couple of stops. A couple of stops. I think there were five stops along the way. And this would normally take about 3 hours by train to get to, you know, to Kotka. So I would have gotten there like at 3 a.m. I figured, okay, well, I'll get there, you know, early. I'll hang out in the train station or whatever. But so we go a couple stops down the line, and then we get to this little town called Riihimäki. You know, Riihimäki is a you know, tiny, tiny little town. And we stop. And everyone gets off the train. When I mean everyone, I mean like the driver, all the conductors, all the passengers, everyone gets off the train. What I didn't realize is even though that is the right rail line, it doesn't go all night. So at 1:30 in the morning, I was stuck in Riihimäki train station. And they locked the train station after midnight, so there was no way to get into the train station. So basically, I had to sleep on a park bench outside of the Riihimäki train station and wait, because the train stayed there, didn't go anywhere. It wasn't like they, you know, just the driver and everyone got off. So they got off, they went away for about 4 hours, and then they came back. So that was my first, and it was cold. I wasn't really ready. I wasn't prepared for the, to sleep outdoors. I really didn't have enough, I had a sweatshirt and all that, but it really was kind of a weird miscalculation on my part, and ended up sleeping outside. I think Bob, I don't know, is right. I think I'm going to have to continue this next week. But interesting, though, and as I was trying to, kind of get some rest and, kind of this park bench, there were a lot of these people wandering around, and I thought they were homeless people. Paul told me later they probably weren't. He said they were probably just the local, residents wandering around after the pub closed, and kind of the local drunks kind of wandering around the train station and that area. I don't know how big of a town Riihimäki is, I'll be honest with you, but I'll never forget that. I mean, that was definitely kind of roughing it. And then at about 6 a.m, the train decides it's going to go again and get it back on the train. They took me the rest of the way to Kotka and for the wedding. So interesting. Now, Kotka itself is kind of an interesting little town because they have a major port there. And you see a lot of, military ships from all around the world. There were, I've saw American military ships, Russian military ships, German military ships. You know, a lot of people, a lot of different ships there at the port. And they have a big festival every year called Meripäivät. Now, Meripäivät, big celebration on the south coast of Finland. It's the same week every year. I think it's in May, June maybe. I don't remember. Paul will be able to let me know. And we actually did in 1994, or 1996, I'm sorry, in summer 96, I was there for Meripäivät. So anyway. So that was sort of my first experience. Now, of course, the rest of my time in Finland was spending time with Paul's wife's family, kind of being trotted kind of from house to house. And, of course, everywhere you go, you have to have coffee and pastry. That's sort of the thing, that's the social thing to do. And most Finns, now might be surprising you, most Finns don't speak any English at all. Some of the younger people do. And as time has gone on, I think more people do. But it's not one of those countries like the Netherlands or Sweden where everybody speaks English. In fact, you run into a lot of people who don't speak English. And that can be kind of embarrassing in pubs, you know, because people will come up to you wanting to practice their English. And you have to be as kind of polite as possible, kind of try to put them off. Because people in Finland love Americans. This is, you know, certainly true. They hate everybody else. They hate the Russians. They don't like the Swedes much. They don't, you know, anybody who has dark skin, they don't like. I don't think I've ever met a more racist group of people than the Finns that I have known. But they love Americans. And I think they're pretty good with any English-speaking people, like Australians or Brits. But, yeah, they're kind of... I have a call coming in. I'm kind of sure whether I'm going to answer or not. I'm not going to answer it. Sorry, whoever that is. It was probably Ross. But I will... I'll get back to you some other time. I'm going to go just see... Hang on a second. Just check. I think that was Ross. Anyway... Bob, I don't know, is saying, this is why people should listen to what I say rather than listening to what I say. Oh, Bob, I don't know. We love you, Bob. We really do. We. You're right, Bob. You are absolutely correct. I do have a lot to talk about still. But anyway, the rest of my time in my first trip to Finland was spent socializing with Paul's in-laws' family, going from house to house, having coffee and pastry. Didn't do a lot of exploring because I was only there for, I think it was a little bit less than 48 hours. Now, what was interesting was, I was there for the wedding. We did the wedding. That was good. Now, there's one, if you've never been to a Finnish wedding, it's not so different from any other kind of wedding. Now, this wasn't a church wedding. This took place in It was a officer's club. Now, the thing that, you know, the area of Kotka where my best friend and his wife live is a place called Kymenlinna, and it's sort of a suburb of Kotka. And right across the railway tracks from where they live is this military fort. It's been there for a few hundred years. And Paul was telling me when he built his deck, he built a wooden deck behind his house last year, 2000, maybe 2009 was when he built the deck. He was digging up the remains of horses out of his backyard. And it's because there was actually a big battle there at one point. And, you know, there are human remains and the remains of horses and other kind of stuff kind of strewn around it because this is like a major garrison. I don't know if this garrison was still being used now, but it was at the time. And if you wander around in that area, around the garrison, it's funny because the garrison is like sunk into the ground. It's not a very big area. You can walk around it in, you know, 20 minutes, but they actually have, this thing sunk into the ground. So you can't see it from, you know, if you're on flat land. It's really, really interesting. And all around this is this beautiful woods, except for the main entrance area, which comes right out on a freeway. And all around this are these wild raspberry bushes. And I remember, this was actually my second trip in 94, that Paul and I went around this garrison. And we picked a whole bunch of wild raspberries because we were there just the right time of year. Fantastic. It was just lovely. You know, I love berries. And there's nothing more I love than going out and finding berries in the wild and being able to eat them. Bob, I don't know, saying, I thought I heard the other day that of non-English speaking countries, the Finns spoke the most English. Well, I think things are changing. I do think that things are changing. But certainly when I was there in 1988... there are very, very few people who spoke English. And maybe it's different now. But keep in mind, I haven't been there to Finland since 1999. So that has been now, 11 years since I've been there. So, yeah, maybe it's different now. But certainly in 1988, The thing that I noticed, one of the things I noticed is that culturally at that time, they seemed to be way behind everyone else, way behind the curve. They were definitely more culturally isolated. This is before MTV Europe. I mean, this is, you know, they seemed very much behind everyone else. And it's funny, you know, people would, you know, were dressed like the 70s in, you know, in the late 80s there. It did seem as though they were kind of lagging. Now, maybe that's changed. And certainly since the internet, because back then there was no World Wide Web. So, you know, the thing is, you know, Finland has not offered a lot to, you know, the pop culture, I guess you could say popular culture of the world. There's a few, you know, classic, you know, Finnish composers and things. You have Sibelius. And I think that really, you know, the only other Finnish export, you know, culturally, I can think of is Apocalyptica, which is a band of these young Finnish guys who play Metallica songs on cello, and they're really good, by the way. If you like Metallica especially, you love it. And of course, the Finns, like other Scandinavian countries, they have a very laid back sort of a society. It's not, you know, people don't tend, they love to talk about the can-do spirit of the Finns, which they call sisu in Finnish. But it seems to me, now this is really weird, that every time we would go to try to do something, every time we go get tickets or, you know, try to make travel arrangements, what you got was the opposite of the can-do spirit. It was, everything was, oh, that's so difficult. Oh, that's impossible. You can't do that. You know, you can't. I remember when Paul, I was there in 96. When I was there in 96, Paul and I took that little bit of travel together. And we were trying to get tickets to go to Stockholm. And it's like, well, we want to go on the night boat. Oh, no, you can't go on the night boat. Okay, well, we'll go on the day boat. Oh, no, you can't go on the day boat either. It's like everything we tried to do is like, no, no, you can't. It's impossible. Now, eventually, we were able to sort it out. But anyway, so much for the can-do spirit of the Finns. Anyway, I'm going to continue this next week. I'm going to go ahead and cut this off. And next week, we'll talk more about Finland. We'll actually talk about the rest of my trips there. We'll talk about the 50-mile hike that we took in 1994 up in Lapland, which is amazing. We'll talk about Helsinki a little bit. And I'll talk about the summer place and how people have summer places. And I'm going to go ahead and fill the last little bit of the show with a little bit of history. Well, today in history, March 5th, in 1461, Henry VI was deposed by the Duke of York during the War of the Roses. I believe the Duke of York, was that Edward III or Richard III? I think it was that Richard III. 1496, in the English King, take two. In 1496, the English King, Henry VII, hired John Cabot, otherwise known as Giovanni Capoto, to explore North America. In 1528, Utrecht governor... Oh, what is this doing here? In 1528, the Utrecht governor, Martin van Rossum, plundered The Hague. I didn't mean to put that one in there. 1558, smoking tobacco was introduced in Europe by Francisco Fernandez. That one's for Fagash Lil. And Europe has been suffering ever since. In 1750, the first American Shakespearean production took place in New York City, which was an altered version of Richard III. In 1770, the Boston Massacre, where British troops killed five in a crowd, and a man named Crispus Attucks became the first African-American to die for American freedom. In 1821, James Monroe was the first president inaugurated on March 5th, because the 4th was a Sunday. Yeah, for a while they were inaugurating presidents in March. Now they do it in January. In 1845, Congress appropriated $30,000 to ship camels to the western U.S. Interesting. In 1849, Zachary Taylor was sworn in as the 12th president of the United States. In 1877, Rutherford B. Hayes was inaugurated as the 19th U.S. president. In 1955, Elvis Presley made his very first television appearance on a show called Louisiana Hayride. In 1956, the movie King Kong was first televised in America. In 1960, Elvis Presley ended his two-year hitch in the U.S. Army. In 1970, the Edison Theater opened at 240 West 47th Street in New York City. That one's for Suco. In 1982, Venera 14, a Russian spacecraft, landed on Venus and sent back data. In 1991, Iraq repealed its annexation of Kuwait after being forced out by American forces. In 1994, the largest milkshake was created in Nielspruit, South Africa. It contained 1,955 gallons of chocolate. Chocolate. 1995, the graves of Tsar Nicholas II and his family were finally rediscovered in St. Petersburg, Russia. Famous birthdays on March 5th include Gerard Marc Mercator, who was born in Rumpelmond, Belgium. He was a map maker, was born in 1512 on March 5th. In 1574, William Archred, and he was born in England, a mathematician and inventor. He invented the slide rule. In 1853, illustrator-painter Howard Pyle was born. In 1908, Rex Harrison, the actor, well-known as Dr. Doolittle, and also from My Fair Lady, played Henry Higgins in My Fair Lady. In 1922, Pier Paolo Pasolini, Italian film director, was born. In 1930, orchestral conductor Lorin Maazel was born in Neuilly, France. Lorin Maazel was actually the conductor of the Cleveland Orchestra back when I was a kid. In 1948, reggae performer Eddie Grant was born, was well known for Electric Avenue. 1953, Russ Feingold, senator from Wisconsin, was born. 1955, magician and atheist icon Penn Jillette was born. Happy birthday, Penn, if you're listening. Penn Jillette being half of the magicians Penn and Teller. And in 1958, Andy Gibb. Of the brothers Gibb. I don't think he was a member of the Bee Gees, but he was born in Manchester, England in 1958. And that is Today in History, and that is the end of the show. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back next week. Stay tuned for James Sanders at 5 o'clock here on United Kingdom Radio. This is Tom in Chicago signing off. Have a great weekend, folks.